then. We all hoped he would. It was a Monday afternoon, a beautiful day down in Te Kuiti. And they'd set aside a car park spot. First of Colin and Verna, and I'm sorry I'm struggling a wee bit with my words to try and get this out, but he parked down the street, 100 metres away. And the view was that he thought, no, I'm just part of the community, I'm going to do what everybody else does. And he walked through and he just watched everyone. The slow clap began as they were waiting for the great man to turn up. He made an unbelievable speech that day. And then that night as well, he got up in front of close friends, families, the people that had donated the money to that particular cause to raise the money. And it wasn't cheap. It was $450,000 to bring it there and to have it all done. It was just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's the things that he did. Sammy, can we get rid of the music, please? It's the things he did beyond his rugby career, which for me are just as significant. Yeah, we'll remember the times with the ball in the hand, this colossal figure. But the amount of gigs he did, and I say gigs in terms of charity gigs, the Rugby Foundation, of which he was a big part of in terms of very injured players. He'd turn up every year, and we'll get Phil Gifford on in a second. I know he'll know the same stories as well. He'd turn up every year. He'd put himself up for auction for a lunch, and it was the biggest selling item. Sometimes we're getting $10,000 to $15,000 for that particular day because people wanted to spend time with Sir Colin Meads. I can say this, and we'll get to BG Williams. I just had a chat with him. He even found when he made the All Blacks in the latter part of Sir Colin Meads' glorious All Black career that he felt this kind of intimidation in a good way, this nervousness because you're around this figure that was such an icon in world rugby. Sid Goings said something similar to me down in Te Kuiti as well. Even when Sid turned up, resplendent in his wee suit was Sid Goings for the unveiling of the statue. He said, even now I feel that about Sir Colin Meads. He just had that ability where you sat back and said, wow, I'm here with Sir Colin, I'm on stage with Sir Colin, I'm chatting with Sir Colin, I'm having a beer with Sir Colin. And speaking of that, he was amazing. And the yarns he could tell. The way he became a public speaker, and again, Phil will be able to talk about this, because Sir Colin was not that sort of person early on. He struggled with getting up in front of people. Then he turned himself into this wonderful orator. Just the typical Kiwi bloke from a farm down there in Te Kuiti who got up there and told us the way rugby used to be. We knew he was going through the battle of a lifetime, and as I said, I'll play you the interview I did with him a few weeks ago where he talked about it, talked about the Taranaki water, talked about how he was going to fight the bastard, as he said, fight the bastard, not give up. And that, again, is symbolic of this great man, that even in the fight of his life, he still maintained and retained his sense of humour and still stayed true to himself, which was, I'm not going to give up. He will be sorely missed. We can debate, and hopefully the news organisations don't go into this, who was the greatest All Black. He just was a great, great New Zealander. Phil Gifford, afternoon.
Hello, Tony. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. I mean, this will be striking at your heart as well. I mean, I guess the only way to describe this, Phil, is we have lost a great Kiwi.
Yes, we have, you know. And yes, you're right, Tony. I mean, despite all of us knowing, if you followed rugby at all in New Zealand, we knew that Colin Meads had been ill for a long, long time and that there was no real prospect of recovery, sadly, from the pancreatic cancer that he had. But it's when it actually happens, it is still, and it, to me anyway, it still felt like a shock, which I know is contradictory, but nevertheless, Pat. Look, one of the things about Colin Meads was that when I was growing up in the 1960s, he was totally iconic. He was to the 1960s in a way what Richie McCaw was in more recent years. If you thought of All Black rugby, with all due respect to the wonderful, the great players that he played with, the likes of Wilson Winry and Brian Lawall and King Gray, but if you thought of the All Blacks, in all honesty, the first person you thought of was Colin Meads, and there was something about the man, and there were a number of issues. The way that he played the game, first of all, and if I could, and as we chat, I'd like to mention the fact that I was one of the many media people who I think treat them unfairly in some ways, but if I could get to that. But he was indomitable. He was just, you just felt that he was a Sir Edmund Hillary lookalike almost, you know, this big, craggy man, and the legends about how he ran up the hills in the King Country, which weren't actually legends. There was a huge element of truth in his pre-season training in that. And the fact that he just refused to, as the great Kevin Skinner once said to me, to bow the leg to any man. And that was the thing, I think, as a player that made him so iconic. And then in the years later, the time and the efforts, that he made for other organisations and for other people, like the IHC, as you mentioned, Tony, the Rugby Foundation. He was an extraordinarily generous-spirited man, which probably not every international rugby player that played against him would have seen that in him, but it was absolutely there. He was just a terrific guy.
Yeah, in some ways, Phil, when you go through his career his life, and it was a wonderful life, the way he lived his life with the passion and the vigour and the way the stories, the smile, as I said, the beers, which he just loved. Do you think in some ways he achieved more, and this may sound bizarre to you, Phil, but more away from his All Black career and post his All Black career?
Yeah, there's an absolute element in that, Tony. And look, one of the things, the first time that I had a chance to have a really good chat with Colin Meads, and in later years I spoke with him at a lot of functions, so I had the absolute honour and pleasure of hearing him speak and also just talking with him often one-on-one. 1977, I'd made a speech at the Maricent Pats Rugby Club in Lower Hutt. I was staying in a little motel in Lower Hutt. I went down to breakfast, one man in the dining room, and I recognised him, of course. It was Colin Meads. And I thought, what do? Do I turn around and walk out again? Because I'm not worthy to go and try and say hello. And I thought, the hell with it. I'll try it anyway. So to cut a long story short, I went up to him. I was very embarrassed, but he was incredibly gracious. And we spent the next 3 hours talking with the guy. And one of the things that emerged so strongly from that chat that I remember so clearly is that he actually felt that he wasn't terribly well-liked. He's in the course of the conversation, he said, I think that, and this is an exact quote, I think people think of me as a dirty bugger. And I have a feeling the ordering off in 1967 in Scotland was still smarting a little bit, even at that stage. One of the great delights to me, I must say, as a rugby fan and as a huge fan of Colin Meads, was to watch as his life progressed, exactly as you say, with the time and effort and that he gave to other people. I think it began to dawn on him that far from being disliked, he was revered and liked, and not too strong a word in some cases, I think loved by people in New Zealand. And yeah, as time went by, I think he became more and more comfortable with the fact that in New Zealand he was an iconic figure, which in a country as small as this is not always that easy.
No, that's true. I mean, I hadn't thought about that in terms of Phil. That's really interesting. I guess because I'm from a different generation in terms of I didn't see a lot of him playing here. So more of my memories, right, I guess, have been built around, which will be a lot of people listening this afternoon as well, Phil, around the great man Poster's career. But that's really interesting because the only way I've ever felt about him is, particularly when I go back to what happened a couple of months ago at Tika Wedi, was just watching the reaction of the crowd and the people that drove that day, Phil, from all over the country, the Lions fans that drove from all over the country. I mean, Lions fans who went down there during the 2011 World Cup, you might remember, Phil, they had a function at his local rugby club. And that was almost like a must-do event for these fans. I want to go to where Sir Colin Meads grew up and where he played his rugby.
Absolutely, mate. And look, the one thing that I really would like to say about it is, as somebody who saw him play an enormous amount of his great rugby, because I started working in journalism in 1965, so I'd seen him play as a schoolboy in Waihee, because King Country would play Thames Valley, so on. First time I saw him play was in 1959 in the Test match. I was 12 years old at Eden Park. That was against the Lions. Now, one of the things that guys like myself that write about him and talk about him is that we tend to focus in on the funny stories, and the funny stories usually tend to involve him maybe giving somebody a smack in the face, like a story that I'm sure you heard him tell in speeches. In 1967, he was kicked in the head in a test match in Paris. He believed that Bernard Dauger, the big French lock, had done it. So he gave him, as he would describe it, I gave him a bit of a smack, you know, a bit of a poke. And Dauger, after the game, came up to him and he had a broken nose and said to Meads in broken English, "What did you do this for?" And Colin replied, you know what it's for, you dirty bugger. And Dauger said, "No, it wasn't me. It was Walter Spongero." He'd actually hit the wrong guy, you know. Now, because I love those stories, and because he told them so brilliantly when he was giving his wonderful speeches in the last 20 years or 30 years, because guys like myself honed in on those stories, the funny stories, it was very easy to overlook what an astonishingly talented and gifted rugby player he was. Now, there's a little clip that I think a lot of I'm sure you've seen it on numerous occasions, Tony, and the next couple of days I know it'll be played a lot, and so it should be. He was holding the ball and running with it in one hand before Sonny Bill Williams was a twinkle in his daddy's eye. I mean, Colin Meads had extraordinary gifts of running and passing and competing for the ball. Would he still be as great a player? And this is one of those fantasy things you get into. I personally believe he would be just as great a player today. I don't believe he would be a lock because at 6'4", bizarrely enough, in rugby today, that probably wouldn't be tall enough. But I believe he would be an extraordinarily good number six. I think he would be an amazing... I think he would be the best blindside flanker in world rugby.
Big call, Phil. Big call.
Yeah, I'm quite at ease with that, to be honest, because, as I said, I actually saw the guy play. This bloke had, as well as being the most hard-edged rugby player that I have ever seen. I mean, he was one of those guys, Brian Lahore, that once talked about certain players, and he could well have been referring to Colin Meads, when he said there are some guys, when you look at them in the first line-out, you know, God, I'm in for a terrible afternoon, as it was in those days, so they played daytime rugby. And Colin Meads, I believe, was one of those blokes that he had that so much controlled aggression. And again, there are people that say, oh, well, you know, today's game with all the cameras and all that sort of stuff. In today's game, he wouldn't have been smacking guys like Dagger because he was never in any way, shape or form ever played uncontrolled football. But what he did do, he was aggressive as much as he needed to be, as he felt he needed to be on the day, you know. And he was very fast, much faster than people thought he was, and he was a terrific runner and passer of the ball. He genuinely was. And all of those things together, it made him the greatest player of his day, the 1960s, and I think he could have been just as good a player today.
Also, as well, the influence over that 95 team as well.